Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Thursday, February 19th, 2026. Max Blumenthal joins us now. Max, thank you very much. Before we get to what happened to Tucker Carlson at the Tel Aviv airport yesterday, a couple of other questions on relevant events. Will Netanyahu and the donor class in America allow Trump a peaceful off-ramp from the mess that he's created by amassing all the military gear outside of Iran?
Great question. I mean, it appears that they're on board with it. I reported last week on a major event in Washington, D.C. that received very little coverage in any media, partly because I did have a source inside the event who was backstage with some of the bigwigs who were on hand for the American Petroleum Institute's State of American Energy gathering this January in Washington, right after Trump's kidnapping of Nicolas Maduro, about 2 weeks after Maduro's kidnapping.
Right.
And they were, you know, not so excited about going back into Venezuela, but one thing they were excited about, and this took place on stage too, a figure named Bob McNally, who's a oil industry analyst for something called the Rapidan Energy Group, is the possibility of regime change war in Iran. McNally said, we can take that oil immediately and it will be a win for our industry, openly declaring that, you know, these industry elements seek regime change war along with the figure who just had a presidential style visit to Washington, at least presidential style security, shutting down highways, Benjamin Netanyahu, who is clearly here to sabotage negotiations between Trump and Iran. Today at the ironically named Institute of Peace, which has been taken over by Trump's Board of Peace, at the meeting of the Board of Peace, Trump said Iran basically had 10 days to make a deal or things would get really bad. And then he started kind of erotically describing B-2 bombers. What kind of deal does Trump seek? It appears at this point that the only thing that Iran could do to mollify Trump and make a deal that would be sufficient for him and Netanyahu would be for Ayatollah Ali Khamenei to join the Board of Peace and basically bow before Trump. And that's not going to happen. Iran has red lines, ballistic missiles, its alliances in the region, and Netanyahu is trying to push Trump to keep those, to violate all of Iran's red lines while we're seeing this unprecedented force posture by the U.S. military. Over one third of all U.S. naval assets are currently in and around or moving towards the region, along with, as Matthew Ho is a frequent guest on your show pointed out, along with aircraft that would not be deployed for just a show of force, that are there to coordinate between other, between fighter bombers, and are clearly being positioned in the region for action. So I don't see how Trump finds an off-ramp at this point. However, I'm hearing from other analysts that there just simply are not enough naval assets for the U.S. and Israel to secure the open passage of freight through the Strait of Hormuz and to neutralize Iran's deterrent capacity. So Trump is really, I think, in a quandary here.
I mean, we're hearing the same thing from Larry Johnson, Scott Ritter, Colonels McGregor and Wilkerson. I mean, suppose Trump shows up at the State of the Union on Tuesday night and waves a piece of paper and said, this is President Pezeshkian's signature. We both signed it. No nukes, gone forever.
Yeah.
What will Netanyahu do?
I mean, there is the World Cup coming up in June. Okay, it would be disastrous for the U.S. and Israel to be involved in a blood-drenched regional war that they launched for absolutely no reason other than Israel sought this war in the middle of the World Cup. There's already efforts to push Israel out of FIFA. It should be pushed out of FIFA. They killed dozens and dozens of soccer players in Gaza during the genocide. Gianni Infantino, who uses FIFA as like a basically a money dump for international billionaires in the Gulf states, was at the Board of Peace. And there, you know, he clearly wants to be a member of this Trumpian one world government. But they can't do this. I don't see them being able to do this after June. Then you have congressional midterms coming up, in which, you know, Trump's numbers are below 37%, so they're historically low approval ratings. MAGA is demoralized. They're looking like likely to lose. That means Trump faces possible impeachment hearings. Epstein, he'll never hear the end of it. Netanyahu understands this. When will Netanyahu get these assets in the region again through the U.S.? Never. It seems impossible. Ramadan is coming up. That means it's a very emotional period for Muslims. Israel is also, if those who understand Jewish-Israeli societies see Israel's approaching a very emotional period with lots of propaganda. It's an important indoctrination season for Israelis. They observe Purim's coming up, where they overcome the evil Persians, but there is also their observance of the Shoah, the Holocaust, where everyone has to stop in the middle of the street as a horn blares. There is the Israeli Memorial Day, where they observe all their dead soldiers, and this is important for indoctrinating Israeli youth into the military culture. And then Passover, where the firstborn Egyptians are all slaughtered as punishment for keeping the Jews enslaved. And so everything is playing out according to this timeline. And the timeline, I think, is very short, which is why Trump, who doesn't know any of this, I don't think he even understands. He's sort of just on autopilot. That's why Trump mentioned the figure of 10 days. And again, if it goes past that period and we start getting into the spring and past the spring, I think, they've missed the mark.
Well, do you think the mark is now, right after the State of the Union?
Yes.
Wow. So the negotiations are a fraud.
Yes, and they always were. It's a fraud when you send Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff to front your negotiations. These are two dedicated Zionist ideologues who represent the Zionist movement in everything they do, who have their eyes on the prize, just as Netanyahu does, which is regional domination and securing greater Israel's foothold for the next 100 years as a hegemonic force ruling through, ruling, against the wishes of hundreds of millions of Arabs and Muslims surrounding it, but doing so through just military domination and having command, being able to essentially rent out the U.S. military, as Miriam Adelson is currently doing. Jared Kushner is a member of the Chabad cult, as is Howard Lutnick, as is Ivanka Trump, as is Trump's czar, anti-Semitism czar, Yehuda Kaplan, who's a major bigwig in the Chabad cult. And they have this...
What is the Chabad cult?
They're dedicated to religious nationalist vision. They're deeply involved in the Israeli settlements and the Israeli government, and they believe that a dead demagogue named Menachem Schneerson could be the Messiah and will return once the temple, which now sits on the which exists at the Al-Aqsa compound in Jerusalem, once the third temple is constructed, and the temple belongs to the quote unquote Jewish people. So it's a messianic cult. They focus on proselytizing within the Jewish world, and they have their tentacles deep in the Trump administration, so much so that a confidential human source told the FBI that they believe Jared Kushner is actually in control of the administration through Chabad, and that Trump has been co-opted by Israel. This was an FBI file released in the latest Epstein dump.
Good Lord. Well, the Trump administration is certainly propagandizing as best it can in support of the war. I'd love your thoughts. I almost feel sorry for him. He can't possibly believe all this. the vice president 2 days ago on Fox, Chris Number One.
And I think it's very important for the American people to appreciate it's one of the most hostile and also one of the most irrational regimes in the world. You can't have people like that have the most dangerous weapon known to man. It would be awful for our security. It would be awful for the future of our children. That is the goal of the president of the United States, and he's got a lot of options and a lot of tools to make sure that doesn't happen. Everything is on the table. We certainly want Iran to stop being a state sponsor of terrorism. They're one of the world's largest state sponsors of terrorism. There are a lot of ways in which they endanger America's national security, but the most important way they could is if they acquired a nuclear weapon, and that is the red line the President of the United States has consistently set. Yes, of course, the Iranians say that they're not interested in a nuclear weapon. We know, in fact, that's not true. They have shown a number of things that make it clear that they're interested in acquiring a nuclear weapon. Our goal is to make sure that doesn't happen, and again, the President has a lot of tools in the toolkit to make sure that doesn't happen.
Know what he's talking about?
Well, it's important to parse J.D. Vance's words. He's keeping the focus on nuclear negotiations, on negotiating nuclear enrichment. And Iran has consistently been willing to negotiate on the issue of enrichment, as the Iran deal proved. Trump shredded the Iran deal. And now he's seeking a new Iran deal, but he's placed himself in this quandary where he's deployed so many assets and he's accepted so much Israeli influence in his administration that he might not be able to make a deal. And as long as it's focused on nuclear negotiation, I think there is a possibility for a deal, but there's this third party, this psychotic, irrational third party, which is the world's largest, not just sponsor of terror, world's largest terrorist actor, world's largest assassin in Israel, which is willing to come in and just smash everything up to prevent a deal. Even if a deal goes through, Israel will work to sabotage it by any means. Why? There are two key reasons now, aside from what we understand about the Israeli-Iranian dynamic. Number one, after Operation Midnight Hammer, when Trump attacked Fordo and Natanz and falsely claimed to have eliminated Iran's uranium stockpile, the uranium stockpile was moved and it is no longer under IAEA regulation or surveillance. They can do whatever they want with it. And logically, Iran should enrich as much as possible to bring it to the precipice of being able to produce a nuclear weapon, because they're facing an existential threat. And number two, Iran has resupplied its ballistic missile stockpiles since the 12-day war, developed new ballistic missiles as well as short-range ballistic missiles. They have cruise missiles. They're getting stronger militarily, and they understand now what they're up against. And so Israel cannot allow that to take place, and it's going to bring every possible means of pressure on the Trump administration to prevent that. And that means that whatever J.D. Vance says about focusing on the nuclear issue doesn't matter, because Israel is in charge in Washington right now through Trump. I think it sounds like J.D. Vance is on Fox News making the case for war. But if you listen more carefully, he's actually trying to keep negotiations focused on something that would make a deal possible.
Is he naive?
Well, I think anyone would be naive to serve as vice president of the U.S.
Right.
You have to be naive and psychotic. I should also add, I think J.D. Vance made a huge political mistake at such a young age in joining the Trump administration, because he's going to go down with the ship. Whereas if he were senator, he could actually be leading the charge against Lindsey Graham and against the neocons and creating his own brand, and then ran against Marco Rubio with a lot more credibility.
Correct. Correct. Instead, he's saddled with baggage that he won't be able to get rid of. The Board of Peace meetings, I hate to call it that, it's so absurd, but whatever it is, he's calling it that. I'll use the nomenclature so people know what we're talking about. In the White House today, what were the billionaires boasting about?
I don't know if you have that Mark Rowan clip.
We do. We'll play it. Chris has edited it down to a little bit more than a minute, and we'll play it now, and we'll hear your comments. Chris?
The potential here is tremendous, but it has to start somewhere. The start is in Rafah, where, as you heard, that will be the first place security is deployed. The plan is 100,000 homes for 500,000 residents plus $5 billion of infrastructure. Over time, 400,000 homes for the entirety of the population with more than $30 billion of infrastructure. Let me put it in financial terms. This is not a problem of money or collateral. This is a problem of peace. The coastline alone, $50 billion of value on a conservative basis. The housing stock, more than $30 billion as rebuilt. The infrastructure, more than $30 billion. $115 billion of value. It just needs to be unlocked and financed.
All this requires money. And so when the UN Security Council resolution got passed, we set about creating the Gaza Reconstruction and Development Fund at the World Bank. It's housed there. The World Bank's role is that of a limited trustee. We manage the donor contributions coming in of the type that the President said a little earlier in his opening remarks. And then we help to manage that money while it stays with us. And under the direction of the Board of Peace, we disperse the money for reconstruction and development projects in Gaza.
Who the hell are these people to steal this real estate?
Who are they? Well, they're the Epstein class. Mark Rowan was essentially in business with Jeffrey Epstein. Through Apollo Global Management and his colleague Leon Black, who was one of the closest confreres of Jeffrey Epstein. Mark Rowan was meeting with Jeffrey Epstein up until 2016, according to the latest tranche of emails, discussing business. I mean, there are five meetings described in these emails. So he's a senior member of the Epstein class proposing to financialize the coastline of a de facto death camp. He cannot even pronounce Rafah, which is the southern city and one of the most populous cities in Gaza that was completely wiped off the map by Israel. And now he's proposing to financialize new housing in Rafah and seeking to entice global billionaires into coming into Gaza while they're ponying up not nearly enough cash to rebuild an area that was destroyed by Israel that has caused tens and tens of billions of dollars of damage. One thing that was not mentioned at this so-called Board of Peace, where they're obviously Board of Peace, at the ironically named Institute for Peace Building, was that Gaza is currently under attack. Israel has violated the Gaza ceasefire between October and this February, over 1,600 times. They've fired at people individually over 500 times. There have been hundreds of demolitions of homes inside Gaza. Just yesterday, Israel was blowing up homes in Beit Hanun in the north. In the north, Israel has been deploying drones to blow up solar power arrays in order to prevent people from living there since the electric grid has been cut off through Israeli attacks. So ethnic cleansing, massacres, they're taking place before our eyes, and that's completely irrelevant to this Board of Peace. The Board of Peace is actually proposing another war on Gaza under the banner of international quislings like Morocco and Indonesia and Kazakhstan, international Islamic quislings of the Epstein class who simply want IMF loans or Trump loans. And that's why they're seated there at the table. It will be called an International Stabilization Force. There was a U.S. colonel named Jasper Jeffries who was seated there describing their plan to send something like 9,000 troops and police trained by Jordan and Egypt, the local vassals, in order to go in and disarm Gaza, which means another war. Seated beside Jasper Jeffries is one of the most corrupt men on the planet, described as corrupt in the Epstein leaks, Tony Blair. What did Tony Blair do? He oversaw the Dayton plan for neutralizing and pacifying the occupied West Bank after the Second Intifada, using mercenary groups like DynCorp to train Palestinian Authority police. What has been the, in killing many Palestinians in the process? What has been the result of that? The result of the Dayton plan is the growth, unprecedented growth of settlements and the consolidation of Israeli occupation, de facto annexation through the new laws that were passed in the Knesset this week to basically allow Israel to purchase areas B and C. That's Tony Blair's legacy. He is a front man for the UAE. He's a front man for Larry Ellison's Oracle, which is the main funder to his Tony Blair Institute. And so it's symbolic that he's seated next to the U.S. military officer who will use the U.S. military to impose this kind of high-tech biometric concentration camp occupation on Gaza. Then finally, Jared Kushner presents the PR commercial for the Gaza plan, the new Gaza, and there's a part dedicated to basically deprogramming the youth of Gaza so that they no longer identify as Palestinians. They no longer see themselves as refugees. They no longer share the stories of dispossession of their parents and grandparents. And then they basically just meld into this wider region of Arab slaves to the Epstein class. And this is the vision they're putting forward, but there's just one problem with the vision, which is that the Palestinian resistance, which stood up against the entire world through 2 years of genocide, is still intact. It is still armed. And as I've said before, this vision sees Gaza as a laboratory for what will be imposed everywhere else. There is protest. There are rest of populations. There are people who do not approve of the Epstein class's agenda. The only thing standing between that reality and the rest of us is the Palestinian resistance that is still intact inside the tent camps of Gaza.
Wow. Before we go, two things. One, what happened to Tucker Carlson yesterday?
Well, according to reports, which came from Tucker Carlson, he was detained. But there's another dimension to this, which isn't getting enough attention today. First of all, Tucker Carlson went to meet with Mike Huckabee, who he's known for many years. I think they were colleagues at Fox News. Mike Huckabee is the U.S. Christian Zionist ambassador. I call him the U.S. Israeli reciprocal ambassador. Sometimes it seems like, well, it always seems like he's representing Israel more than the U.S. and representing a faction of Israel that isn't even representative of where most Jewish Israelis are and is more extreme. I don't know how this interview went, but Tucker did not leave the airport, the Ben-Gurion International Airport near Tel Aviv, and with good reason. Israel had prepared a propaganda trap for Tucker, and they were going to try to compel him to meet some Christian Zionist, Palestinian Christian who works for Israel, and to try to embarrass him and to confront him. And what I don't know what other security threats he would have faced, but Israel's a very scary place. It's a place where, you know, our own reporter was jailed and subjected to very harsh treatment under false charges. So Tucker left, and now they're trying, you know, former Prime Minister of Israel, Naftali Bennett, has called him a chicken shit for not leaving the airport and getting out and being propagandized. Now they're attacking him for supposedly lying about his detention. But the fact is, if they take your passport or they take your producer's passport, you cannot leave. And then they take you into another room. You are detained. That is just technically true. And speaking from my own personal experience, going in and out of Israeli-controlled territory many, many times, pretty much the only thing that happened to me was I was asked if I was Jewish, if my parents were Jewish, if my grandparents were Jewish. I don't know if they wanted to test me for J-positive blood, but as soon as it became clear that I was Jewish, they simply waved me through. And any further questioning took place in public, in the line at the airport. I was not taken into another room. Once you're taken into another room, as Palestinians usually are, you're detained. And so they detained the most popular American broadcaster because he is a critic of their policies. What questions could they possibly have asked him?
Yeah.
You know, how could he be seen as a security threat?
Well, what is this clip that we're watching? Chris, if you want to put it up again, is this him arriving? And the Israelis claim that this is him leaving and he was never detained. He's taking a selfie with somebody.
It looks like he's taking a selfie with the Shabak commander, the Shin Bet guy who was had interrogated him or was going to interrogate him because he had asked for one with this, you know, famous guy. And that's his producer, who I think is named Neil Patel. So, you know, it shows, okay, Tucker didn't get slapped around. You know, they didn't like subject him to torture. But he's in another room. He was questioned by someone who's like a security figure, and he was...
He responded to a text from me and said, I'm safely, from the plane, obviously, we're safely out of Israeli airspace. It was horrible. It was authoritarian. It was dirty. It wasn't the Israel I had visited a number of years ago. We'll let you know what it's about when I'm back in the U.S. Chris found a clip that you'll appreciate. Someone who you'll recognize him immediately, in 2010, predicted the United States would look for an excuse to bomb Iran.
I harbor no doubt myself. There is a significant concern that Iran's existing conventional response capabilities might actually provoke the sudden outbreak of a truly fierce and devastating war, the ultimate control of which would gradually slide away from the grasp of the various warring parties. And the same outcome would follow. It would unavoidably escalate into a catastrophic global nuclear conflict. For them, having a research center is reason enough to attack them.
Having a research center is reason enough to attack 16 years ago.
Well, prophetic words from the late Fidel Castro, who maintained and initiated relations with Iran. And Iran, despite being an Islamic republic, was happy to initiate an alliance with Cuba, a secular Marxist-Leninist government, because of the shared threats they faced, but also because of their shared commitment to a form of social justice. And so there was an understanding that Fidel Castro had that and he was also looking at the progression of regime change wars up until that point. There was also an attempt by Cuba to actually have its own civilian nuclear program. But because of the collapse of the socialist bloc and the collapse of the Soviet Union, I was actually able to see what was supposed to be a nuclear plant, I believe in Matanzas, when I was in Cuba during the end of the special period in 2000. And the reason that they were seeking a civilian nuclear program in Cuba was not to develop nuclear weapons and threaten the United States, but because they knew that they needed to diversify their energy sector in order to prevent what is taking place right now, which is a Gaza-style energy blockade by Donald Trump and Marco Rubio, the face and voice of the South Florida Miami Mafia, to cause starvation and famine across Cuba. So Cuba has been preparing for this for decades under the leadership of Fidel Castro, just as Iran has been preparing for this very moment. And we're now at an inflection point in history where the U.S. is seeking to, under Trump, this year, possibly in the next 10 days, in the next several months, with this very short timeline, wipe out the remaining independent nations that have stood outside the Epstein class under the auspices of an ironically Orwellian named Board of Peace.
You're so correct. And here's Senator Ted Cruz yesterday predicting that. Chris, number 14.
It is entirely possible, Sean, that in the next 6 months we will see the regimes fall in Iran, in Venezuela, and in Cuba.
There you go.
Well, and Tel Aviv Ted is perfectly positioned to believe that. He embodies that belief as a Cuban-American whose office on Capitol Hill is essentially managed by Israelis like actual Israeli nationals who are effectively Israeli assets, whose career has been fueled by big oil and big Israel. This is Ted Cruz's dream. I mean, if you look at his Twitter account, occasionally he'll talk, you know, he'll tweet about the Houston Rockets, but he's mainly tweeting about Israel or the collapse of Cuba. And you look at the Twitter account of Representative Carlos Jimenez in South Florida, one of the key representatives of what I call the Gusano Industrial Complex. And he's celebrating the killings of 32 Cuban soldiers who apparently were who lost limbs and came back in small coffins because not all of their bodies could be recovered, apparently. I'm unclear about this, but he's sort of mocking the idea of Cubans being mutilated, Cubans being shredded. And these are people who claim to be Cubans. That's why Fidel Castro called them gusanos or worms or parasites, because they actually revel in the death of fellow Cubans. They are reveling in the suffering of Cuba, and they don't actually intend to go back there and build a better future. If we remember, under Fulgencio Batista, the U.S.-backed dictator who was overthrown by the Cuban people and Fidel Castro's guerrilla bands, the Cuban poor did not exist. They lived in misery huts in the hillsides. They were hated by the Cuban leadership, which simply answered to corporate America and the mafia led by Meyer Lansky. And that's the kind of Cuba they aim to return to. And so I think one of the key problems that these figures face in trying to do regime change in Cuba is that many Cubans actually have a political education and understand that these people hate them, have shown nothing but contempt for them, have orchestrated terrorist attacks, killing Cubans on beaches, blowing up Cuban airliners, and now celebrating the deaths of Cuban soldiers. And they are going to band together to prevent that class, the Gusano Meyer Lansky class, from going back to Cuba and taking control.
Wow. Max, you're an encyclopedia when it comes to these things. Thank you very much for sharing all of your knowledge for us. And unfortunately, I have to run, but I could keep listening. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you, Max.
Thanks for the opportunity. Good seeing you.
Thank you.